That's Jamaican jazz pianist Monty Alexander teaming up with reggae's rhythm masters, drummer Sly Dunbar and bassist Robbie Shakespeare on Soulful Strut. This is from Alexander's 2000, as some people would say, or 2000, whichever way you want to say it, his album of that year, Monty Meets Sly and Robbie. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Friday. It is July. It is the 17th of 2015. And Free Your Mind Friday reigns once again at our customary old number. We're back to 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm so happy to share that piece of news with you because it means that our move, PRN's move into its new headquarters, is complete. We're back to our regular numbers so that we can facilitate your calls as we used to on Free Your Mind Friday. And I want to thank you. Many of you have formed. I mean, this is incredible news, and I'm just so pleased about it. I just have to share it with you. A group of people have organized listening clubs, Lead Stories listening clubs. And what it is that they organize a group of their friends into a kind of loose club, if you will, of listeners to the show, and they trade opinions and ideas about the programs with each other, and it is also to encourage people to tune in to Lead Stories and to tune in to PRN. And this is, I just got a call this morning from a listening club, two listening club members who were giving me feedback. And this is just a wonderful thing. I mean, they organize these things on their own, and it is just a wonderful testimonial, I think, to the impact of the program among listeners. So I encourage you, if you'd like, to encourage others to listen to PRN and to listen to Lead Stories via a listening club, and just trade your ideas and your thoughts and to form this extended family that we have. I'm just so tickled about the whole thing. So thank you so much, those of you who have formed listening clubs, one in North Carolina as well, one in Baltimore. And I'm just floored by the whole thing. I'm just so thrilled to hear that. And I thank you so much for placing such value on the information that we share on this program. Well, it's Free Your Mind Friday, and the tradition that we now have is that on Friday we kind of express our ideas and we share our thoughts and opinions about current events, or we take the conversation wherever we want it to go, to encourage people to examine things and to re-examine things, and simply in other ways to just express an opinion about something that we might have covered on the program or something outside of that. This is the time that we connect with each other via the sharing of thoughts and opinions and ideas. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. We start out in California with Harvey. Thank you so much for calling.
Hello, Eutrice. Wonderful, Eutrice. How you doing?
How are you today, Harvey? How are you doing?
Very good. Well, I come with positive news, and that is that I believe that we have a planet-wide expansion of consciousness going on right now, even though the media isn't talking about it, or they are in a certain way, but I don't think they are expressing it. And I was walking by one of the newsstands here in Berkeley, and I saw New York Times front page, center, big picture, the planet Pluto. And it showed the mountains and the plains of Pluto, and it said that there's water there. And I thought to myself right then, I felt like there was an expansion going on again. And, you know, we've been to the moon. We have our vehicles on Mars. We've seen pictures of Jupiter and Saturn and their moons, and now we've seen a picture of Pluto. And I think that before they were sort of dots in the sky, but now they're actual places. And I think as we go into space, as we become intergalactic, that these planets will be seen as oases where there's water and resources that we can use on our way into infinite space. And so I think that this is a new consciousness. And, you know, Earth is under a lot of stress right now. We're kind of like Earth-phobic. And it's because of all the things on the planet, you know, the ocean rise, the climate destabilization, nuclear problems, et cetera, et cetera. There's so many to talk about, and especially overpopulation. And so this would relieve a lot of stress on our planet if we can start going out there. And I think we need anti-gravity. That's the one big thing we're missing here, an easy way to get into space other than using rockets and all that fuel. And I would say right now, an interesting thing to look at is if you go to YouTube and you put in the words flywheel and anti-gravity, flywheel, anti-gravity, and there's some interesting stuff there about the strange properties that flywheels have in conjunction to their relationship to gravity. And number two, I would also think that since UFOs are generally the shapes of them, when I've seen pictures of them, they're flywheel shaped, they're rounded. So maybe UFO vehicles use flywheel energy. And I was also thinking that if we can ride the magnetic waves of the Earth by using superconducting magnets in combination with flywheels, maybe we can overcome gravity and rise into space like a bubble rising up through ginger ale. And then we can start occupying space and taking stress off our beautiful planet Earth, and we can start actually really working on repairing it rather than destroying it that we're doing now. It's like when birds grow up, it's in their nest, it's fly or die. And I think we're at that point, and I think it's a great new thing because it's a new frontier, an exciting new way to see the universe. And now we have pictures of Pluto. I mean, this is astounding. So I think that this is a new consciousness, an expanded consciousness, and also it's a possible way for a new way that we'll see each other. We won't just be Earthlings, we'll be intergalactic beings. And I think this is a major change on the planet.
Thank you. Thanks for your call, and thanks for getting us started today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Treece, how you doing?
Great. It's so good to hear you.
Good to hear you, too. I mean, I've been listening to your show, but, nice to talk to you again. I think there might be some technical issues with me being on hold, because even though I was on hold, I couldn't hear the radio show, so I'm pretty sure you guys are, you know, kind of still working out the technical kinks of the new station.
Oh, I see. While you were on hold, you weren't able to hear.
Yes.
I guess that's an easy fix. But how have you been, and what are you telling us today?
Well, I've been doing good. Had transitioned my professional career. Well, not my professional career, but to another job, so I don't work downtown anymore. But the field that I'm in now is education, and I wanted to bring this up again because Chicago Public Schools have announced their new quote-unquote CEO,
yes,
which is Forrest Claypool, who was the chief of staff for Rahm Emanuel.
Yes.
And it is just so, you know, it's just so crazy, and people just need to open their eyes about this because, you know, Forrest Claypool, never been a teacher, never been an educator, but he runs the third largest school district in the country. So, you know, it's like a sign saying, you know, where education is going in this country today. I mean, privatization of this education is just so blatant and so bland. It's just ridiculous. I mean, you know, you got the other day you were talking to somebody who was talking about education. I can't think of the gentleman's name.
Tom Pedroni.
Yes, and he brought up a lot of good points about, you know, this standardized testing and the Common Core. And it is just amazing how much, you know, companies like Pearson is making just, like, they're just making a killing, you know, over this Common Core thing, because you know, I'm noticing like school districts spending millions of dollars giving money to these, you know, quote unquote privatized educational companies, and they're just leaving all these school districts with big budget holes, you know, in their budget. So it's like, you know, where is education going today? What is, you know, what is the purpose? I mean,
rather than pose it as a question, Henry, I'm going to ask you to give us what you think is the explanation. Could you answer your own question? Where is education going? Rather than pose it as a question, say, this is where I think education is going.
Well, where I see education going, I guess, within the next 10 years is, well, I'm pretty sure this is no secret to you or any listeners, but there will be no traditional public schools within the next 10 years. And that's the way I see it, because they are funding less and less public schools right now, and the charter schools is just like making a killing and just taking over. Now, where there will be, I guess, there will be very, I wouldn't say it will be totally eliminated, but there will be very few public schools, and those public schools will be in more, how should I put it, more, I guess, suitable areas of people. I don't know how to explain it, but
you're doing very well.
Black and brown neighborhoods will not have public schools. That's my whole thing. And they'll have
but your new CEO, Forrest Claypool, who has absolutely no experience in the field of education at all, is the second and consecutive person with no experience really at heading up a school district of this size, the nation's third largest. And I'm talking about Arne Duncan, who barely can put on the table a bachelor's degree in sociology as his qualification for running the nation's third largest school district. And that was President Obama's Secretary of Education. Rahm Emanuel is a personal friend of Forrest Claypool, and he was Rahm Emanuel's chief of staff. So what is this saying to you in Chicago about the political process that yields these kinds of policy makers who are now in charge of millions of dollars in terms of budgets, but also in charge of the educational futures of these school districts that are heavily African-American and Latino, and just coming through decades of basically inferiority in terms of the quality of education and the quality of educational attainment and so forth and budgeting. And this is happening. Forrest Claypool is coming in at a time that Emanuel intends to swing a heavy axe at the school budget.
Yeah. Well, it's telling me that none of this is about education.
Okay.
None of this is about education. This is about money and how much money they can get from the educational system, which is supposed to be a public service, you know, to the people of the community. But it's, you know, education is basically the new hustle amongst politicians. And, you know, Forrest Claypool is the fifth CEO in the last 5 years of the Chicago Public Schools. So what does that tell you? That tells you there's a lot of instability within the Chicago public school systems, and it is just really crazy. But to me, it's not just about the Chicago public school system. You know, I currently work in a local district here in the Chicago suburbs, and you know, even though it's not, you know, big as far as CPS, I see the politics of privatized education, you know, in that system as well. You know, not on a grand scale, but it's still there. So it's like none of this is about really educating, you know, the children. You know, it's all about, you know, just money. It's a big money grab.
But it is a money grab that is nonetheless predicated on the exploitation of these children. And it has not been a cause of alarm for the Obama administration, and it is not a cause of alarm for any of the presidential candidates who clearly could see the connection between race and oppression and the denial of quality educational services in large urban areas. We know this to be the truth. I did a series, as you know, on let's get real. What is the reality? This is the reality. And I think you're right on the point here about what is the signal that is being sent from city halls across the country and from Washington, D.C. as to exactly how they are intending to treat these large school districts. And it is to just phase out public school education. I think you're right on the money there.
Well, one more thing, Yatrice. I mean, the reason why Obama does, or any of his cohorts, see it that way, because they look at it from an elitist standpoint. They're not, you know, looking at it from, you know, a grassroots level standpoint and actually, you know, following the education of some of these children in these, you know, poor communities. Because, you know, the problem is that when you don't see it that way, you know, you really don't either know or don't care. And to me, it's basically they don't care as long as they, you know, as long as their friends, you know, in the education privatization company get their money, you know, i.e. Common Core and Pearson's and all the other, you know, educational firms that's benefiting from this, it's okay. And at the same time, you know, with this, you know, to me, from my perspective, with this Common Core, it's actually, you know, dumbing down the kids, if you ask me, and it's making the teachers' jobs, you know, much harder, and it's much easier to fire them now because of the fact that, you know, now that everything is, you know, about, you know, outcome-based education, you know, you have more leverage to fire teachers now, you know, with or without probable cause. So it's like, you know, it's a big money scheme, and it's basically like you just said, it's exploiting the children, and it's just basically the meat ticket.
So what do you suggest, Henry, if you could give us a fast synopsis here, what do you suggest is a workable idea? In order, you're clear about what, and in your analysis of it, you're very clear and you're on point. What should the response be?
Okay, well, there's two levels of options we can go here, and I'll go through this real quick. One of the options is basically we need to educate the parents to get more involved in the schools and get more involved in school politics. Now, on a big city Chicago level, because of the fact that the school board is not appointed, I mean, not elected, but it's appointed, we need to seriously get involved with, I guess, with the politics of whoever's running the schools. Unfortunately, the mayor's running the schools, but I would suggest this. With school boards that are elected, you need to really be involved and really understand. So my suggestion is go to these school board meetings, vocal, you know, voice your opinions, make them known, and parents of school children need to come up with a plan, get organized, and get together to help their schools become better. The second alternative is just to basically we just need to build our own school and get away from the public school system.
Wow. Thank you so much for your call. I'm so delighted to hear from you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We go to New York next, and Patricia, you're on the air.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
From New York. Hello?
Yes, we're hearing you, Patricia.
Oh, okay, I'm so sorry. You know, I wanted to follow up Harvey and Henry because, you know, Harvey's was commenting about pictures that we're seeing from Pluto and the fact that there may be water there. We may have to end up, you know, black and brown people may end up having to leave the Earth and go, you know, check out Pluto and see if we can find some friends on Pluto. Because clearly black and brown people are hated everywhere around the world, in every corner of the world. We are just hated. We have friends nowhere. You know, I was listening to Henry talk about what's going on in the Chicago public school system with Forrest Claypool, Emanuel's chief of staff, being appointed a Cook County commissioner. And, you know, he is following in the same playbook as Cuomo here in New York, because what both of them have done is they have cut millions of dollars out of the public school system. They have destabilized the public school system, and they say, oh, well, wait a minute now. We have these failing schools that we're going to take over, and what are we going to do? Oh, I know what the answer is, charter schools. You know, so again, Emmanuel, what he did was he cut about maybe $200 million. There was a pension obligation to the teachers union of about $634 million, so he paid that. And the minute he paid that, he immediately said, okay, well, you got your pension money, but now we're going to have to cut 1,400 teachers and $200 million out of the education budget. And I look at him, I look at people like Cuomo in New York, I look at the anniversary. Today is the anniversary of Eric Garner's death here in New York, but they're going to have this big rally tomorrow in Brooklyn where everything is closed down. There's nobody, the people that they're supposed to be talking to tomorrow is going to be home or out in the Hamptons, you know, sunning on the beach. I look at Eric Holder. I know you talked about this earlier in the week. But the idea that he was able to buy this million-dollar apartment just a couple of hundred yards from this office that he is now returning to. I mean, we have no friends anywhere, and we really are on our own. And I think unless we begin to accept, just accept the plight that we're in, you know, we can't get along, and we can't always be friends. And we're not always going to be friends because nobody wants to be my friend. And unless we accept our reality, we're going to continue to have happen to us and continue to be in the position that we're in. And I hate to sound so negative, but I want to operate from a position of reality. And I refuse to deny my reality.
What would it take to be your friend?
Don't try to hurt me. Don't hurt me. Don't do anything that's gonna harm me. That's going to inflict pain and injury on me. Don't do that.
Well, I'm a devil's advocate here, Patricia, and say, well, that expectation is kind of unreal. That the world we know, our reality says, that's not the way history has taught us that this is something that is likely to happen. So in as much as you're not going to have an expectation of having friends, what then is the alternative?
Well, I will try and educate as many people as I can about our plight. I will try to point them in the right direction in terms of the politics and the systems that are just so interconnected. It's like a spider's web. And you really have to just cut through the entire web and just eviscerate it in order to come out on top. And that's a lot of work. And people have to be willing to sacrifice. You know, my thing is nobody wants to sacrifice. They want to fight without getting hit. You can't be in a fight and don't get hit.
Well, again, I'm just asking the question. Do you have, in maintaining this view, some would say, well, you're being paranoid. This is an alarmist situation.
Yeah, I'm being paranoid. I am alarmed. I have every right to be alarmed. Everything in my daily existence says I'm under attack.
Mm-hmm. And so the position that you are taking in your everyday life is what?
That's a good question. How do I respond to my everyday living? Well, first, the first thing I do is I control my economics. That's the first thing I do. So I control my economics. The second thing I do is that I am involved in everything I can be involved in, and I'm everywhere where I can be.
How do you control your economics, Patricia?
Every opportunity that I have, I make certain that whatever service I need is conducted with a person of color who looks like me. All of my medical providers are African American or a person of color. I go into my car to go to the shoemaker. I get into my car to go to the cleaners. I don't utilize anything in my immediate environment because it's important that we make certain that anybody who looks like us can eat and feed their families. The first thing I do is I control my economics.
Okay. What else do you do?
I support organizations that are like-minded and think like me. I support them financially, and I support them with my time and my in whatever way I can.
Wow. How did you respond to the series I did on this very question about getting real about where we are?
That's a hard question for me because on the one hand, I agree with your analysis and your assessment, and I support, the positions that you took. I'm not really quite sure how else to expand on that.
Okay. Well, this is a very illuminating interchange that we're having here because in the end, all of these huge concepts boil down to individual action. And what is very telling here is that you have on your own, as an individual, you have decided what the reality is, and you have devised self-sustaining mechanism, a system. You have a system of defense. But it is rooted in the recognition of the reality that you live every single day in which you feel that you're under attack. Now, many people would say that is an exaggerated way to look at the world, that it couldn't possibly be so bad that you internalize this feeling that you're under attack. It is not that way at all. It is just that you just over-exaggerating things.
Mm.
And yet, so many people, this is not at all an exaggeration, at least in the people that I know and talk to, they feel it, they see it, they experience it every single day. So to ascribe it to this notion that people who feel the way you do and who have interpreted this reality the way you do and the way I do, that we are somehow, we're just putting ourselves in unnecessarily in a stressful situation because it really isn't that bad out there.
It's bad out there. It's bad out there. I mean, when you look at this guy, Frank Clark, it's reported that he is going to be appointed, and this is in Chicago now, it's reported that he is going to be appointed as the school board's new chairman. But this is the same guy who orchestrated the closing of those 50 schools in Chicago 2 years ago. So for anybody to believe, to honestly not understand that their children is now the fodder for people to get rich, they are doing it on the backs of our children's education. They are doing it on the backs of our children's incarceration. They are doing it on the backs of our children being killed. Anybody who doesn't understand that is not operating in reality.
Thank you very much, Patricia, for your call today.
Thanks.
Very sobering, very sobering. From Pennsylvania, Ty, you're on the air. Hello, Ty. Okay, he's not there. From Rosedale, New York. Jose, you're on the air.
Greetings, my professor. How are you?
Hello, Jose. How are you?
Ah, the old guy. The old guys here listening to all these words of wisdom. Well, by the way, I couldn't hear the program. So I don't know if my topic was touched upon. But, you know, I'm always on this quest for learning. And your brilliant mind has never ceased to amaze me. So I'm going to throw my little thing in the kitty and see how it comes out.
Okay.
You know, I've throughout this political campaign, not only this one but others, I have not heard the American people get up and stand up and demand political campaign finance reforms in this rotten, crooked system. I'm living in a place where I believe that the political system is actually an exercise in futility and frustration. Now, how can this country, with all the brilliant minds that we have here in this place, allow these rascals, with all these ill-gotten gains that they have robbed and plundered from the people, and they turn around and use this money to corrupt these men and women that they are running for elected office? We are supposed to be, we're out here figuring out who we're gonna vote for, and we get involved in this politics of personality. And so many of our folks are ready, get ready to put their head on the block for Hillary Clinton. And I mean, folks are already in different camps. I'm gonna vote for this one, vote for that one. Nobody is actually making any demands of these rascals. Now, we have to have a system where we, the little people, we can begin to have some confidence in this political exercise. How can we sit back and we are getting ready to go to the poll to vote for someone that we said is going to be the leader of the so-called free world? And here is it, they are already in the pockets of billionaires and trillionaires. And these guys take these money, and when they get in office, they hold no allegiance to us, and they go out there and they make decisions based upon their benefactors, and these decisions influence and affect the lives of countless millions of people, not only in this country, but throughout the world. Economic agreements, trade agreements, cultural agreements, military agreements, all these agreements affect the lives of millions of people. And we are sitting back in this country that everybody are feeling great about living in the land of the free world. And this is the example that we all must live by. And we're not looking at what is happening, the crookedness and the duplicity and the hypocrisy and the just plain downright crookery that is happening right before our very eyes. And Sister Utrecht, I'm an elder, and I am befuddled, as my good friend Hugh Hamilton used to say. I am befuddled because I thought that this was a country of brilliant minds, minds that are here to work in the interest of the masses of the people, to see that this country lives up to some of the principles that it claims it was created upon. I'm not talking about those other things. We know what it was really created upon. But they have a charter there, or something that says that they believe in democracy and equal rights and all that kind of stuff. And here we are as a people, and we can't even get these things straight. Where are we heading? What is next for us? Because we are looking at Greece, we are looking all over the place, and most folks don't understand that all these things are going to come down on the backs of the American people. And the sad part about it is that the folks who run this place knows how to shift the attention of the common man and send him off in a whole different direction and have us going at each other's throat and that understanding that we're all in the same boat together.
Well, you have displayed a very good understanding of the reality. Now I ask you the question. Mm-hmm. What is the counter-offensive?
Well, you know, my sister, the minds of our people is where the problem lies. And I don't know if one has the means of reaching sufficient minds to actually bring about any kind of meaningful change in the society. The means of reaching enough. When I walk in the street and I talk to people, and I see how lost we are as a people. And every aspect of the system here is geared towards dumbing down the masses of the people. We don't have any institutions that is conscious enough to even make an attempt to reach to the minds of the people. So I am befuddled right now at my old age. I believe I'm not too far from going through the proverbial pearly gates. And I was hoping that I would see the kind of movement that is necessary to turn our people's minds around. I would like to, when I go through the pearly gates and I run into Brother Malcolm and Marcus and all those folks, I could at least take some good news to them to tell them, yes, that so-called Christian epiphany has begun, and our people is on the right track, and I was there to experience it, and I at least contributed in some way towards that. But I don't have the answer.
Well, in a way you do, because you are sharing the beginnings of an answer, and you're sharing a workable solution. Mm-hmm. We just have to build on it. And you are saying exactly the same thing that has been said before, many generations before you. This has been the observation. And it means that people have to get serious about applying this knowledge and information in the interest of liberation, in the interest of improving their lives, and in the interest of survival. So thank you. You do have, in fact, a very good handle on things. And the question is, how do we now move to the next stage with the knowledge you have? How do you activate a response? How do you articulate a response and come up with systems that speak to your survival? That's the question. But thank you so much for your instruction today, Professor Jose.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We are reconnected with Ty from Pennsylvania. You're on the air. Ty, are you with us? Don't tell me we lost him again. Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, did you see Celine?
Yes, you're on the air, Ty.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about how I see these movements being so narrow-minded, but it's like they never focus on a broader spectrum of issues and I view the dime as having more than two sides, and what that means is that you have a lot of people single-mindedly focusing on an issue, but they never connect climate change with black liberation, and a lot of times people don't realize that the same people that inflict a certain kind of pain towards a certain group of people and another group of people, how it's it roots it back to the same problem.
Okay, well, here's the question. You're saying what is not connecting, but at the same time, are you appreciating the context in which people are doing anything at all positive, that it is a very complex scenario? And very often, they have to make choices as to where to start. And you start where you can best yield results in the short term. Sometimes it may seem to be too one-dimensional. Sometimes it may seem to be, to use your word, so narrow, but you have to start somewhere. So do you recognize in a sense that that might be what you're looking at, the fact that at the stage of the development of whatever it is they're doing as a movement, they are choosing to start somewhere, and eventually it may broaden. But let me ask you, if you had your recommendation to make about broadening things, could you give us an example of how this might work, given the example that you gave us today?
Well, I think I would love to see movements connect with each other, like mm-hmm. certain affiliations, like the Black Liberation Movement with like climate movements, because I noticed that a lot of environmental movements, they don't have too many people of color, and I would like to see a lot more people of color join that, and just a lot of movements connecting, like basically like a movement, like movement of movements, which means that all the movements we have now would just turn into one big movement, kind of like a revolutionary thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what we need to overthrow the system, is nothing falling short of a revolution, in my opinion.
Okay. Do you see any evidence at all? Could you point to any evidence that there is at least some progress in this regard, and it is moving in that direction? Do you see that at all anywhere?
Yes, I do. And I'm not very pessimistic, and I do look at the bright side of things, and I do notice that people are a lot more open-minded, and there's a lot more consciousness going around regarding a lot of issues, and I see that a lot.
Where do you see movements working together, and what impact has that been, has that had on the sphere of influence that they're hoping to have over particular issues?
I think a great example is Palestine with the Black community.
Okay, explain what's happening there, and in your view, why is it and how is it yielding a beneficial result?
Well, I think basically just spreading awareness, because a lot of times, like, I do see some Palestinian rappers, like, basically, like, affiliating themselves with some of the artists here, and I think that's great to kind of just attract a lot of people. And basically, one group of oppressed people connecting to another group of oppressed people, and I think that that's very detrimental for a government, because now we realize that hey, we're oppressed just like a certain group of people. So now if we work together, all of a sudden, like, we're more able to overthrow the system, I think.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call, and thanks for holding on. And I'm so sorry that the first time we got disconnected, but thank you for your call today. We go to New York. Ali, you're on the air. Ali,
hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, you trees. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I just the first thing that I wanted to say is to Harvey, that was a great thing that Harvey brought today. And he's talking about the space, and he always talks about something that the rest of the population on Lee's story we don't talk about, which is mm-hmm. fantastic when he opens up the call. And I will have to say to Patricia, I was thinking the same thing, but I was thinking about the same thing the other way around. The 1% is going to leave this world, find another planet to go to, when they're going to lose Mother Earth, completely polluted for us to try to survive here. So
they will move on and leave us with the mess. Is that it?
Yes. That's it. I actually, when Harvey was talking about it, I was thinking about the same thing, but in a different way than Patricia. But I think that's what they will do, because they go to this exploration, and they have money to make a spaceship and all these things. So they will leave us here with a mess. And I think that's eventually what will happen. And Henry, he was talking about education. I will have to say to Henry that here in New York, I just heard that last night, there's two schools. One, I think, is a boys and girls high school. What they're doing is they're making the teacher reapply for certain jobs, and some of the teachers that they don't get rehired, I don't know, I think they will send it to other schools. This is what they're doing here in New York City with education. So I think from the Boys and Girls High School, 66 teachers applied for those jobs, and I think they only hired 23. So this is what they're doing here in New York City. But my call actually is to talk about the gentleman, the professor that you have for who teaches, I think it was Wednesday, who teaches at the University of Pennsylvania, I believe.
That's Professor Mauro Guillen.
Mauro, yes, Professor Mauro. Okay, this is what I have to say. First of all, Beatrice, I would love for you to get somebody else to explain.
Oh, we are continuing the conversation. And in fact, on Wednesday, we have another view coming up on Puerto Rico, which is very different. What I wanted I wanted it explained about how Puerto Rico was viewed within the world, the financial world, and how it was created. This was not accidental. Puerto Rico was created as a market, and Puerto Rico also was dismantled as a market. And this is what we need to understand. It's not just about debt. It's about the creation, the artificial creation of markets and the artificial disassembling of markets. And that is what I wanted people to understand, the economic structures or systems that create these things.
Because he was talking about, and he repeated the phrase emerging market, that Puerto Rico was a part of the emerging market. I don't know if you remember that part when he was talking about that.
That was the topic, Puerto Rico as an emerging market that was also created and broken as well.
Yes. So when he was talking about that, I was just thinking about it. If you have a child, you have control over that child, and then you have control over what you're going to feed that child, besides, you know, the immunization that the government makes you do for this child. But like in the case of Puerto Rico that he was talking about, the emerging market, if you have a constitution where you cannot go outside from your borders to trade with other country, either import or export, how can you be an emerging market where somebody could control you almost every facet of your government?
Well, this is the whole point. This is what we needed to get out of that discussion. What we should have gotten out of that discussion was that this is the political arrangement that controls the economic infrastructure of a country. It is emerging markets they have these things in common. They're controlled by outside forces.
And at one point, I think at the end of the conversation, he made a very weak argument where I was almost shocked to hear by somebody who is a professor at a university. He actually mentioned about the corporations which they haven't really paid tax. They weren't paying taxes in Puerto Rico. And as an emerging market, if you don't get taxes from those big corporations, how can you think that you're going to progress? But he made one point, which I thought it was very weak. He said one of the main problems in Puerto Rico was that they hired too many municipal workers. And I was like, huh? I was really shocked that was
It may have shocked you. What we were getting was an explanation or a discussion on how these things are organized. It's not that he favors this or doesn't favor that. It is that this is how it works. The question of an emerging market, and you know, to the ordinary person and the average person, they say, well, gee, the same point that you're making, these are legitimate points, and it defies logic that it should work any other way. But in fact, when we appreciate how Wall Street thinks, how the bondholders think, how political governments think, these are the things that they negotiate, they design, they come to terms and agreements and these things, including governments, as in Puerto Rico, that would make decisions that are antithetical to the welfare of the people. But this is how that level of political system, that's how that it works. We don't understand it that way. We think, well, you know, corporations are here Well, why aren't they paying taxes? Because that's the arrangement. Mm-hmm. You know, they get special dispensation and to pay taxes. Well, they say, well, we're providing employment. But if you look at it, the higher paying jobs, they bring those with them. Those don't go to Puerto Ricans. You know, but they have a presence in Puerto Rico because it's to the benefit of the corporation. They're bringing the help that they need. They're not paying local people and placing them in the high jobs. No. So there's no benefit to the community, the immediate community, not at all. And that's what he was trying to explain, as opposed to thinking that he was advancing a theory about this is really what the problem is in Puerto Rico. He's saying, understand that Puerto Rico was a created emerging market. That's the term that is used, and he explained what that was. What is an emerging market? Well, it's essentially a group of people, including, as he said, the World Bank and the IMF. Mm-hmm. They decide, and with the banking community and the financial community, they get together and decide, hey, you know what? If we select this area of the world, or we select this country or this state, let's just create a market. And then they put the formula to work. And it always has the same result. There will be peaks because Puerto Rico was doing really, really well for decades. It did fantastically. However, the bottom line is a different picture altogether. Puerto Rico has no control over its finances. It has no control over the rhythm of the market. It has to deal with the inevitability that the market will collapse, because that's the way markets operate. So we were getting that level of understanding from how the financial world sees any entity or any state or any region in terms of what would it take to get out of that region or state or country the maximum amount of profit for minimum investment. And that's how it works. So Puerto Rico is an example of an emerging market. And next week on Wednesday, we have Victor Rodriguez, who will give us an entirely different interpretation of debt peonage and how Puerto Rico was situated to yield exactly the same result, that inevitably it will be a situation where it will have to pay an enormous price after giving these corporations all the advantages that they wanted. And now Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans are saddled with the devastating outcome, which is typical of these, quote, emerging markets, unquote.
And the last thing that I will have to say, and it's going to work out the same way that it works out all around the world, the poor will stay behind, and they will suffer the worst part of it. Because people that they have money, you know that they will move on for the most part.
I share that view, but I also say the poor has to get together. They have to do something and utilize knowledge in order to fashion an entirely different way of life and a different outcome. It's ridiculous that, you know, people suffer this way. And that is why I talked so much about understanding systems and how systems work. Because if you do, you can anticipate how the system will, what the system will produce and how the system will function. But you have to fashion your own system. Thanks so much,
Ali,
for your call. I appreciate it very much.
Bye-bye.
That brings us to the end of our program today. Great thoughts, great exchange. I really do appreciate the instruction that we get from our guests and the interchange. It's an education in itself. Stay tuned. Coming up next is the Lifeboat Hour with Carolyn Baker. You can write me and let me know how you you're reacting to these programs at leadstories@gmail.com. And we'll continue this adventure on Monday. Until then, please know that for me, it's a great pleasure and a privilege to be in your esteemed company. I thank you so much for it. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.